And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. No! Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars: The Clone Wars. In this episode, to locate the missing colonists, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, and Rex go undercover to infiltrate the slavers on Zygeria. Anakin struggles with his emotions as the wily Zygerian queen forces him to take questionable actions in order to carry out his mission. There will be... Kitty Queens!
Kitty Queen! Aww.
And again, for the second week in a row, Obi-Wan getting beaten up. Ahsoka's terrible improv skills, my favorite Rex costume of all time, and Anakin's really, really uncomfortable, and he really needs an adult right about now.
Yeah.
We're talking about Slaves of the Republic. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
In the 5 minutes I haven't talked to you.
Oh, look, my Skype just said that the Irredeemable Shag is now online, just as we were talking about him.
Yeah.
Scumbag.
I had an eventful 5 minutes. A kitty came into my room, and I had to chase her out again.
Crazy.
My kitty was just like, you're talking about kitty queens? I'm the queen of the house. Hello. I was just like, not you. Goodbye. She's like, damn you, human. And I was like, I'm sorry. I have thumbs and bigger than you, and I can pick you up and throw you. Toss out the door. So, that was my 5 minutes.
Kitty queen.
I know they're based after coyotes, but she looks like a kitty.
She's a kitty cat.
She is a kitty cat, and she's all nuzzling on Anakin. And she's all just like, this is my human. Yes.
At least she isn't talking like, oh, it's perfect and stuff like that.
I would have punched her in the face then. But no, she's just like, you know, like a cat does. Like, she sees Anakin, she's like, that's my human. It's mine now. This is my human. Let me sit on you. So, I like her a lot. So, kitty queens.
Putting her scent on Anakin.
I hope. Yeah. The first thing, because I know cats, like, rub their cheeks on things to scent things, but the first thing I thought about is just, like, spraying or just, like, pissing on Anakin. Because I'm gross and I'm a terrible human.
Yeah, she's got her tail up in the air just like, hi, smell my butt.
I don't think she has a tail.
No, they don't. That's the least kitty thing about them, but they're still kitty cats.
Yeah, they used to.
She might have a little bob or something.
You know, you said last week Wolverine, though.
Yeah, she doesn't look like Wolverine, though.
Yeah, the men look like Wolverine. Like, girl, she looks like a kitty. Though, now that I think about
she
it...
She has to be a reasonable hotness in order for it for the flirting later on to be viable, so...
You know, now that I think about it, I don't think we saw any other Zygerian women in this episode.
No, I think you're right. I think, now that you say that...
Knowing next week, I don't think we see any next week either, but it's been a hot minute since I've seen next week's episode, so I'll keep an eye out, but I don't think we see any other Zygerian women. We do, this is a note I have for next week, and I'll talk more in depth of it next week, but we do see one other Zygerian woman, because they did a Star Wars Rebels comic, where Sabine gets captured on purpose by the Zygerians.
Well, maybe they're like a matriarchy because there's no king, but all the workers and slaver people are men, maybe.
Maybe, but yeah, that's the only other Zygerian I know of is the one that captures Sabine in a Rebels comic, which I was saving for next week because it takes place, you know, in Rebels timeline, so I didn't want to spoil anything for next week. So I'll go more in depth in that next week. But there is a Rebels comic where Sabine purposely gets captured by the Zygerians. So it was interesting. The few pages of it I found on Twitter and I read it, and I really enjoyed it because it's in that Star Wars Rebels magazine, and all those comics are canon. But it's like an 8-page comic. It's not very long.
Right.
So yeah, it was really good, and I really enjoyed it. And if I remember to send you a link, I found the whole thing on Tumblr. So I saved that link for myself just to remember to put it in next week's notes. And so I need to remember to get that to you too in case anybody wants to see it. So anyway, so yeah, I had a good 5 minutes since the last time we talked, though. It's been a week for everybody else.
I'm still doing good.
You know, it's a weird time thing. Like, it's only been 5 minutes for us, but everyone else, it's been a week.
It's sort of like space travel, and yeah, it's really complicated to explain. You got to get into the theory of relativity and everything, but yeah, podcasts definitely travel at a different speed.
I guess it's not really easy to I'm guessing it's easy to explain for us because we just put out episodes and.
Well, by the end of, but by the end of the run of Jay Guys and Jedi, you and I will be 180 years old, while our podcast listeners will only age 2 years.
Maybe 4 years, because we're coming to the end of year two on for us. So.
That's true.
So, well, it'll be here before we know it. So, Slavers of the Republic.
Yes.
Oh, did you like the episode?
I did.
Awesome. Me too.
I think I liked this episode more than I liked the last episode.
Yeah, because the last episode's a lot of setup, but this really starts getting into like.
This one's a little meatier for sure.
Yeah.
Story wise. Or character wise, really, it's meatier.
Yeah. So, all right. Here we go. Slavers of the Republic is the 78th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on December 2nd, 2011. We're almost out of 2011. It was written by Henry Gilroy and Stephen Melching, and it was directed by Brian Callen O'Connell. Some extra information for you. Sadly, this was the second least watched episode of the series, with only 1.36 million viewers at the time.
That's weird.
But then I was like, wait, it's the week after Thanksgiving and the beginning of the Christmas season. Because it's December 2nd. So, and that's starting to get around, like, exam time and test time and, like, school's getting ready to get out in most places. So I can understand it, especially since the way viewership works so differently nowadays.
Right, that too, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like, viewership used to work so differently, and now everything streams and stuff like that, and Clone Wars is one of the high. I'm wondering something though. I'm tangenting now, but with Disney is creating a new streaming service, and in 2 years they're gonna be pulling off all of their Star Wars, their Marvel, and their Disney movies out of Netflix, Hulu, and stuff like that to put all on their streaming service. And I'm wondering. I'm assuming that means Clone Wars too. So I think they're finally gonna be pulling Clone Wars off of Netflix. We have no date yet, though. We just know that the streaming service is coming in 2019.
Well, yeah. You also want to wonder if their streaming service is going to want to go to the PG-13 route on Clone Wars. As we were discussing a couple episodes back, you know, the difference between Rebels and Clone Wars. You know, Rebels will have a spooky, scary confrontation with Ahsoka and Vader. But it won't show Vader cracking someone's spine over his leg, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe they might, you know, what their decision will be. Maybe they might want to keep it on Netflix and something so it's a little more.
I don't think it would be that big of a thing because they're pulling their Star Wars movies and their Marvel movies too. And both
Star Wars movies are all starting to be PG-13 now. The last two were. The last three were.
That's why I don't think it's that's why I think they're going to pull Clone Wars, because their movies are PG-13, so what's stopping them from pulling their PG-13 show?
That's true.
But we'll see. It might get a little dicey for me to
get out. The Force Awakens was PG-13, right?
I'm 99.9% sure it is.
Yeah, me too.
Google,
and I know Rogue One was, and I know Episode 3 was.
The Force Awakens is PG-13. PG-13. Yes, so
okay.
Anyway, some more extra information for you. The scene where Anakin salutes to R2-D2 to signal him to eject his lightsaber is an homage to Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, where the character is taking the place of the movie's lead characters. Obi-Wan is in Han's place, Rex is in Lando's place, Anakin is in Luke's, and the Queen is Jabba's, and Ahsoka is in Leia's place, and R2 is consistent with his own movie placement. I'm so sorry I'm about to butcher your name. Rajia Baruti. I'm so sorry. Me too. Rajia Baruti is the voice of Queen Mirage. Rajia, other works includes the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and a lot of video game voice acting roles, including Diablo 3, Uncharted 4, and the voice of Maleficent in Disney Infinity. Victor Brandt is the voice of Keeper Argus. His other works includes Metalocalypse, Avatar The Last Airbender, the Spawn television series, and Superman the Animated Series. The slave processing center over the volcano was originally based on concept art for the Season 1 Ryloth arc that didn't get used. And those floating plants at Queen Mirage's palace, if they look familiar to you and you didn't block it out of your mind, it was because those are reused floral designs from the Mortis arc.
I didn't notice that at all.
I know. I just saw that. I just wanted a reason to bring up the Mortis arc again. We will never forget it. It will always live with us forever.
You know who else will always live with us forever?
Forever and ever and ever and ever.
It just kind of sounded like you burped at the end.
That was like the dying Yoda.
Forever, 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 forever.
That's how it should have gone down in Jedi.
When
Luke, you will be the last Jedi forever.
And ever. And ever.
Okay, well, since this is a slave episode, this one's definitely taking a little S&M turn.
Right, I like this one. It makes me smile. When I typed it, I was just like, ah!
Yoda switches top to bottom. Pitcher to catcher.
50 Shades of Clone Wars, right here.
Those who enslave others inevitably become slaves themselves. In bed!
Yeah! Get it, Christian Grey.
I don't know if it's inevitable, but I'm sure there are people that switch places.
Mm-hmm. And it's fun to, you know, play both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not bad. Different strokes for different folks. But, yeah. I mean, I need to stop eating Jelly Bellies when I'm trying to talk. They're so good, though.
Just remember, we got candy coming at the end of this episode, too. You don't want to put yourself into a sugar coma.
I know, but they're just really good. I discovered my store brand at the Kroger's is so much better than regular Jelly Bellies because they actually taste like the flavors they're supposed to taste like.
Uh-huh.
And they're so rich, and they're delicious because the Kroger brand of Jelly Bellies, which is under, I think, if you have a Kroger's, it's under the Private Selection and the Private Selection brand, and they're so good.
Nah, we're north of the Mason-Dixon line, so we don't get Kroger's.
Yeah, they don't have them in Florida either, but they are so delicious, and they actually taste like what they're supposed to taste like, unlike real Jelly Bellies, and they're so much cheaper. You can buy an entire bag for like $2 opposed to, you know, a small tiny bag for like $5. So I highly suggest them. They're really good.
We can get actual Jelly Bellies in the bulk food section here.
Oh, shut up.
Actual branded Jelly Bellies, yeah.
They've become my favorite candy to eat while I'm riding. My go-to eat food while I'm riding, so...
It's really nice to have them in bulk food because you can, you know, they're all the same price, so you can make your own mix of all the stuff you like.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of like that because I can't stand butter popcorn Jelly Bellies, but like these, like the ones, the Kroger ones, actually taste a lot like butter popcorn. They're so much better, and... It's really good. They have an espresso one that every time I eat it, I'm just like, huh, coffee.
The last time I saw the Hair Metal Hero, that reminds me, he was smoking his vape. It had a hot buttered toast with strawberry jam flavor in it that tasted exactly like a piece of hot buttered toast with homemade strawberry jam on it. It was amazing.
One of my friends had a Captain Crunch Berries one, and it tasted like Captain Crunch Berries. Apparently, there's a bacon one out there, and as much as I love bacon and it's my favorite food, I'd have to be very wary.
Yeah, but I don't know about the savory food flavored vape things. I had a roommate who used to he used to get like pepperoni pizza and stuff, and it all used to taste. I don't associate pepperoni pizza with smoking pleasure, you know. I'd rather associate cotton candy, you know.
You know, though, like, they have all those potato chips, like those Lay's potato chips with all the flavors. And good God, the biscuits and gravy potato chips actually taste like sausage gravy.
Yes, we were having that conversation. I don't know if it made it onto the recording of it that I just put out for Eat It and Beat It, but when we were at Dario's pig roast, we were discussing those very same biscuits and gravy chips. They taste like biscuits and gravy. It's amazing.
Yeah, like they're running commercials about voting for the new flavor for this year, and on the commercials there's a taco one, and this person's like, "You can actually taste the lettuce and the cheese," and I'm like, "Huh." Really? And then I remembered the sausage gravy, and I was like, yes, I bet they do taste like lettuce and cheese. Because those chips just blow my mind. Like, the first time I ate one, I was just like, I do live in the South where you can have sausage gravy potato chips. Potato chips. That's the joys of living in the South. You get sausage gravy. I totally did that at Dragon Con, too. It was like 2 a.m., and the only thing open was a Dairy Queen. And I went and I was just like, I want something food. And I went and I saw some chicken nugget strips. And I looked at them and I was like, what sauces do you have? And they're, well, at first I was looking at the breakfast menu. I was like, there's no chance I could get the breakfast menu, can I? And they're like, no, but we do have the sausage gravy. And I was like, can I have that and chicken nugget strips? And they were like, sure. So my best friend is just watching me, like, scoop up a white sausage gravy with, like, chicken nugget strips. Because I was drunk at the time and just eating them. And
okay,
that
sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, she hates sausage gravy. She thinks it's just the grossest thing. And I was just like, Megan, I can make this.
She's wrong.
I'm scooping it in my mouth. She was raised by super health food parents, though.
Usually, yeah, a lot of sometimes those people rebel, though. You know, they get out of the news, and they get their first taste of a Big Mac, and they go like, ah, ha, ha.
She is one that thinks wheat pasta is a vacation from the
right.
Pasta she
really
eats.
Yeah, is living the wildlife, taking a walk on the wild side.
Yeah, and wheat pasta is disgusting. It is so gross, and I can't.
You mean like the whole wheat?
Whole wheat pasta.
Yeah.
It's gross. Has that taste to it? Though it does remind me of a tweet I saw where this woman tweeted Chipotle, and she was like, Chipotle, thank you so much for your this one dish. I'm a vegetarian. It was really good. And they were like, there's meat in that dish. And she was like, no, it's not. And they're like, yes, it is. And her next tweet was her with a bunch of meat packages. And she was like, well, that's the end of that.
Yes.
I was like, good job, Chipotle.
I've seen that happen before. Vegetarians getting a hold of something with meat. And they're like, this is the greatest food I've ever had. Blah, blah, blah. And then you tell them and they're just like, oh, well, I don't care. I saw a guy who thought he was eating, who was a celiac, and I can't remember what he was eating, but he was told it was gluten-free, but it was definitely not gluten-free. And he was just like, this is amazing. I've never had gluten-free food that tastes this good. And he's just like, no. And the next day he was like in the hospital.
that's my niece right there. My oldest niece has celiac, so she can't even touch bread without breaking out.
This guy was cooking at the restaurant too. He was part of like a silent partner or something, and but he would cook there. And you know, if he if he opened up the thing, the container of flour, and a few, just, you know, particles, literally grains of flour landed on his face, he would get a big red welt right there on his, you know, on his face and on his arms and stuff like that. Yeah, it was no joke.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is with my niece. Like, it's just a no-bread zone with her because she can't even touch it or she'll start breaking
yeah.
out. So
oh, yeah.
She's... So we protect her. She's my little doppelganger. Oh, she's gone to high school in August.
Oh my god.
I used to
How
read
you feeling,
story.
Grandma?
The thing that got me was when I was in college, I would leave for a semester and come back and stuff like that, and so I didn't get to see her that much. And there's one semester during the summer when I left, I was reading her bedtime stories, and when I came back for the winter, I was like, okay, Melissa, I'm going to read you your bedtime story. And she went, no, Aunt Hope, I'm going to read to you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, no, you're not allowed to read to me. You're not allowed. And now she's going to high school next year.
Next thing you know, she'll be sneaking hits off your vape.
No. No. Smoking was the worst thing I ever did in my life. Don't do it, children. It's bad for you. Anyway, slaves.
Anyway, Star Wars.
Slaves to the cigarettes. Let's do this.
Ooh, good, good segue.
I'm really good at that.
Smooth, Hope, smooth.
Like me inhaling my vape. All right. Oh, we're already at Act 1. I was about to start rereading all the episode information.
No, we did all that. We did all that mess.
Oh, my bad. I'm in the wrong place. Here we go. Act 1. Last week, a group of Togruta people, roughly about 50,000 of them, went missing from a colony. The Zygerian Empire used to run on slave trade and are trying to rebuild again. The Jedi are getting involved because A, slavery is bad, and B, the Separatists are behind it. Squad Gold Team Obi-Wan, Rex, Anakin, and Ahsoka arrive on the planet of Zygeria to go undercover to find the missing colonists. The planet is surrounded by high-class scum, ready to get their slaver on. Anakin is going to keep the Queen occupied with his quote-unquote magnetic charm. Obi-Wan scoffs at him, and Rex is like, I'm telling Padme. The Jedi give their lightsabers to R2-D2 for safekeeping. Ahsoka gets to play the part of the slave, while Anakin gets to play her master. She sniffs that he better play a better master than he normally is. Entering the city, Ahsoka finds it hard to believe that an advanced society, advanced civilization, can have slaves. Anakin uses his grumbly voice to explain that it makes people powerful, and his mom was sold by the Hutts in a slave market just like this. They see a Twi'lek slave fall, and his Zygerian master commands him to get up. Before he can act, Ahsoka stops the slaver from striking the slave. While getting a point for bravery, her actions run the risk of the Jedi getting exposed. Anakin slides in there saying that Ahsoka has been freshly caught, and he apologizes for her, and he wants to see the Queen. The Zygerians are like, why are you wearing her armor? You're clearly not a kitty person. And Zygerian name drops a guy named Bruto Denturi. A droid swoops in telling the slaver to bring Anakin to the palace. Anakin and Ahsoka head for the Queen while Obi-Wan and Rex sneak away to find the slaves. What do you think of Act 1?
I love that scene where he mentions his name and, you know, the little eyes swoop in. And you know somewhere the Queen is sitting in another room going, wait, crap, bring that guy here, you know, but they do it without showing any of it. It's just, it's a nice little scene. The beginning when they're in the ship coming to the slaver planet, man, what a colorful inside of the ship. There's just all different colors from the color palette all over it. There's even like a wall button that has red, white, and blue, like, it totally is just, like, USA button on the wall.
You know what those buttons are fashioned after?
No.
A New Hope. Those are the panels, that they fashioned those after all the panels on the inside of the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Those kind of hexagonal things.
Yeah, but this one was round, and it just had red, white, and blue stripes in it, and it was just very weird to see something that evoked an American flag in Star Wars, you know, because you don't think of any particular country. Usually, if you think of a country in Star Wars, it's usually like a Far Eastern, Middle Eastern country, you know?
Because we mentioned, like, you know, the Twi'leks are France or the Mandalorians are, like, Germany. But there's no real America.
Yeah, I mean, this planet is totally, you know, a variation on... It's like, when I was watching it, I'm like, oh, this is going sort of more towards the Raiders of the Lost Ark feel of Lucasfilm, you know, where almost like you're in, you know, a 40s movie in an Arabian country, in, you know, Saudi Arabia or something, you know. And
I had a note of that, too. It reminds me of ancient Egypt, but with a little bit of, like, South American nods to it, because they have this kind of, like, her palace kind of looks like...
Well, it's got Middle Eastern, too. It's got very sort of mosque-like buildings and turrets and stuff.
Her palace reminds me of a Mayan temple, because they have, like, those pyramids that are very, like, square.
Yeah,
but the rest
tiered
of it looks
ones.
Like Egypt to me. Or, I guess, like, movie Egypt.
Once again, there's act ones of these. Often, you know, they pop right out with a little color scheme and a little bit of showing off on the sound design, and this one's no different. The sound of the just standard slaver ship, as it flies and lands, where it's like fiery and rattly at the same time. It's this intense.
I think they stole Dinar's ship from last episode, because I'm pretty sure that was his ship from last week.
Right. But they all have that. It sounds like instead of just like ship engines, it sounds like it has an old blast furnace attached to it or something. It's a very Star Wars-y thing to have each ship. Each type of ship have its own sound, and sometimes even each ship within those have their own, you know, individual sound, and it's often just a minor thing, but it makes so much difference. And my only other note is Anakin's getting filthy in this one, man. he's going undercover dirty. He's not only infiltrating separatist directions, but slaver directions. So, and he's pretending to be a slaver, which to Anakin, that's got to be the lowest of the low that he's got to portray, and it's got to be killing him. It's got to be just winding him up to have to, you know, every second that he's got to be nice and pretend to be one of these people. He's just filling up a little swimming pool in his soul with blood of the people he's going to destroy when he finally gets the chance to spring his trap or, you know, get his chance. And it also shows, okay, he really hates these people. They're obviously going in there. I don't think they're just going in there to see what's going on. They're going in there to take that shit down. So Anakin, who can often be like really impatient foolhardy in his approach, not in this one. He's even like Ahsoka's looking at him like, damn, master, you are in deep cover, you know.
Yeah,
you're being a dick. And so if it comes to him getting his revenge on, oh yeah, Anakin will be very patient, and he won't yield to his base instincts, which would be to kill all these people immediately, you know. So it just shows that his rashness is a bit of a choice for him, you know. So,
you know, two things on that. One, I think that's a very Vader thing to do. Vader is very happy to wait patiently to finally get back at somebody. So it's kind of nice seeing that early on with Anakin, showing his willingness to wait to get his own revenge on stuff. And the other one is, on kind of a sadder note, Anakin's the best person suited for that job.
Oh, yeah.
He's the only one that's seen how slavers work firsthand.
Yep.
So He really is the best person for the job, even though it's killing him.
Well, yeah, I mean, psychologically, he's like switched, you know, this has got to be, like, if he was undergoing therapy or something, they would be like, this is very bad for you.
Yeah.
To assume that role, you know, and it makes all the, it makes basically Ahsoka him, or anybody that he, any slave is like him, and he's, now he's, I guess, Gardula the Hutt, or, you know, or any of the slave masters.
He's Watto right now?
Well, Watto was just who he got sold to. Watto almost is like his, well, it's his master, but, you know, Watto wasn't a slaver, you know. Watto was just the guy who was like, I need someone for my shop. Watto's dirty by implication, but, you know, the slavers, the people that actually go out and get him and his mother, you know, I think Watto, he has a bit, even though you could tell he hates Watto when he comes back to see him, but he also has a bit of affection for him because he was a kid, and Watto was still, like, was, you know, he wasn't a cartoonishly evil slave master, you know? He was just sort of like a grumpy boss more than anything else.
And we did see that Watto had some affection for him.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Watto genuinely liked him and would have mercy. Yeah, go home, you know, go take the rest of the day off or whatever. So, yeah, but the people who grabbed him from where, you know, his mom from her home, and, and it must have been Anakin, too, because, you know, he remembers it, so.
I think that Shmi probably gave birth to him after she was a slave. And probably told him about it. That was how I took it.
That's how I took it, too, but I seem to be getting the impression that he remembers it, you know? But maybe I could be wrong with that, you know? The dialogue doesn't really, when I think about it, I guess it doesn't really have to be interpreted that way at all.
I think it could be read both ways, because they're not clear with it, and that's the fun of open interpretations.
Yeah.
It could be read either way. I don't know, I think it would have been fun if Anakin tried to pull off a Watto voice the entire time.
Yeah.
Hey, queen.
Hey, kitty woman.
I'm a slaver.
So, I don't mean to interrupt, but where's the sandbox?
We're gonna, like do it in your room, right? make horse babies.
That would be awful, though, if you go, like, where's the bathroom, and you just open up a room and there's a cat box in there. It's just like, oh, jeez.
You see, like, her slaves, like, scooping the dirt and taking it out.
Well, I would hope that the royalty would have clumping royal cat litter.
That's always just the fun part of, like, something I do to, like, before I have to, like, talk with the celebrity and stuff like that, if I get really starstruck, I just imagine them shitting. But now I'm just imagining, like, characters in Star Wars shitting and what that entails.
Yeah, it's always going to come back to Chewbacca wiping his ass with an Ewok.
Yeah. I guess Grievous doesn't have to shit. He just opens a valve and pours out oil.
Yeah, Grievous probably has, like, a little filter that he has to change every once in a while. Or that he has his butler robot change, actually, now that we know that.
Yeah.
I want a butler robot.
Oh, man. Imagine, like,
I want Dooku a sassy butler robot.
Imagine, like, Dooku or Palpatine shitting, but they're old men, so it takes 3 hours.
They're drinking space prune juice every night. Yeah.
Darth Sidious, Darth Sith Lord, Lord of the Empire, drinking his prune juice. Yeah.
That's what he's thinking to himself. This is what it comes to. I'm
or does
Lord,
it completely...
Lord of the universe, and I can't even take a dump, and I gotta piss 15 times in the goddamn night.
Or is it one of those things that, being a Sith Lord, he just forces it out?
A force dump.
A force dump.
Blue lightning comes flashing out. He's gotta have his royal... toilets has to be specially grounded.
like lighting your farts on fire almost, but with force lighting.
Yeah, I hear that's what they run the Death Star on. It's like this very efficient style of energy.
I think this is a new low for us, Chris.
Yeah.
Yay!
Jedi turds. If a Jedi's constipated, they crap out kyber crystals.
Oh, there's a youngling arc where in season 5, I think it is, where Ahsoka takes a bunch of younglings to go find their kyber crystals for their lightsabers. And that just puts a new meaning on it.
Yeah, really, what they should do is just eat a lot of space cheese and space meat.
Yeah.
Bind it up.
A cool thing about that arc is two of the episodes in that arc actually are the two that won Clone Wars Emmys, and it was because David Tennant is a guest voice in those episodes, and he won the Emmy for being a guest in those episodes.
Oh.
I know. It took me a while when I first watched that episode. I was like, why does this robot sound so familiar? And I was like, oh, it's David Tennant! Cool! So, but that's season 5. That's like at least probably 6 months away for us. So, did you have any other notes for Act 1?
Nope, that's all I got for Act 1.
After that really shitty conversation.
Oh, whoa!
I couldn't help it. It was there. I had to take it.
Yeah, so, talking shit.
Talking shit on J Guys and Jedi this week. So for me, one thing I just have to say is this is my favorite Rex costume in all of Clone Wars, and I wish Rex got to wear it all the time because he looks super fly, super fly. And I like seeing clones in different costumes, and he looks amazing.
They got a little bit of, I can't remember who they were, that had the sort of Roman art. Remember they had, way back, they had the guy who looked like the Crusader, you know, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed knight guy. And they it looks like that and the Mandalorian, little Mandalorian mixed into it, like, you know, ancient Mandalorians or something.
The guy that was in the Luminara Ventress Ahsoka episode, who was voiced by James Marsters.
Yes.
I think his name was Gaius. Gaius keeps coming to my head.
I think you're right.
I'm not 100% sure here. Let me. Gaius.
I'm about 85.7% sure that you're correct. Or at least very close with the name.
I'm under. Why are there so many people somewhat named Gaius? Not him. He's from a video game. And what's the other one? Nope. Okay, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure his name was Gaius, but I'm not sure because now I can't remember it. What is the name of that episode? It was one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, jeez, I don't know. That was way in the first season.
Luminara.
I just remember it because it was one of the first Photoshops I did before I sort of settled into our sort of Photoshop format for J Guys and Jedi shows.
Yeah. Okay, the episode was called, I know, Cloak of Darkness, and his name was, where is it? Argaius.
Captain
Argaius. That's what it was.
So it was like Gaius crossed with a sock.
Yes. So, I was close, man, for that being, like, 3 seasons ago. I'm quite proud of myself that I remember that random character.
Oh, you weren't going to shake something like that out of my brain, that's for sure.
I'm more proud of that I remember that James Marsters voiced him. Yeah. That is what I'm most proud of. Go me. But yeah, like, this is my favorite Rex costume of the entire series, and I wish he got to wear other costumes more. I think he wears one other costume in the show, and it looks stupid on him.
Yeah, they need to do more undercover, because that's truly, like, Jedi's love to do undercover. Almost every Jedi, like, infiltration, they're great, they're total spies, so...
I just read an entire book of it. That's the whole premise of Dark Disciple. Because Quinlan Vos spends a good chunk of the book undercover, and trying to get Ventress to work with him, which makes me, because that's what Quinlan Vos's specialty is he's an undercover Jedi. He only does that. That is his only thing that he does.
I'm just remembering, I've seen some Clone Wars in the future, because I remember there's an arc where Obi-Wan goes undercover.
That's the box episodes where we're coming up on that, I think.
I've seen those episodes, because I remember going like, Obi-Wan just drank the whatchamacallit potion.
The Polyjuice potion, yeah. Yeah, that is one. That's two episodes away. Because we have the end of next week's arcs. We do have a one and done, and then we have that arc with Obi-Wan undercover. So that's your few episodes out. So yay!
I don't know. I probably just tuned in on it randomly.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just reminded me that with the undercovered.
Well, my other two notes for this is something I just want to point out at the start of this arc and for the rest of the series is how much time that Rex gets solo missions with the Jedi. Because usually before this, he was mostly always with the 501st and leading his men. Starting here in the wake of Umbara, we're going to get to see Rex join the Jedi away from the other clones. And he's being picked for specialty missions like this, which always kind of fascinated me because Rex is lower ranked than, say, Cody, and Rex gets to shine as an individual. And I'm pretty sure that the Council and Obi-Wan and Anakin all know what happened to Rex and Krell, which is part of the reason why they started choosing him for missions like this. Because I don't think Cody would really fare well on a mission like this. But it is absolutely perfect for Rex, who is now flourishing as an individual.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see Rex get these kind of like solo missions away from the 501st, where it's just he's the only clone with the Jedi. And I really like these missions because we're going to start getting a lot of these.
It's because he's their buddy now. And they're just like, come on, Rex is coming with us, because they know he's got their belly.
Yeah. Squad goals. Squad goals.
Yeah.
Clone Wars squad goals.
Who's got your belly?
Rex does. Rex is here. He has and his back. And Anakin's ass. Chris is like very awkward laugh. Quiet
now
laugh.
We're going into Hope's fan fiction.
Oh my god. I read a fan fiction the other night. And it wrecked me. Because it was in the wake of Rogue One.
Did it wreck you?
No, it didn't have Rex, but the cast, like, you know, like Jin and Cassian and all them, were lost in the Force in the wake of their death, and they couldn't find each other, but they eventually were drawn together, and they watched, they were like, well, what if our deaths didn't mean anything? And they watched, like, Luke blow up the Death Star in the Fall of the Empire from the Force, and they got, like, justifications for their deaths. And they knew that the six of them would always be together in the Force. And I was just like,
oh, jeez.
And so they had to watch everything in the Force. And like,
that's not too manipulative a piece of fiction.
I know. And it was, it wrecked me. But then I also, I've gotten into reading fan fiction where if they survived what happened, and like them being on the Battle of Yavin and them being the Battle of Hoth. And those have been fun to read because a lot of people have written those stories of like, what if the Rogue One guy survived and stuff. So I've been enjoying reading those as well. Apparently a lot of people ship Luke Skywalker and Bodhi Rook together. And I don't get it because I haven't dove into those stories yet, but I'm really excited to read them. I am down for that shit. Probably because they're pilots. They're the pilots. So, I'm very excited to get to those. I haven't got to them yet, though, but one day I will, soon. Because I must. It's me. Anyway, my last note for Act 1. my final note is, I, again, just like that, Clone Wars isn't shunning away from heavy topics like slavery. Even though this episode came out in 2011, it's still very timely, because there is still slavery in parts of the world. It is a different form of what we're used to, because a lot of it is like financial slavery and like pretty much just holding down the lower classes with debt and stuff. But there's also human trafficking, which is, we talked about, I think.
Yeah, there's still plenty of human trafficking going on, so yeah.
And we talked about that recently. I forgot which arc it was. It might have been an end of season 3 arc, or maybe a beginning of season 4 arc. But we did talk about that very recently in an episode 2. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, again, another showing of, like, how Clone Wars is still so timely, even after 6 years that it's been since this episode came out.
Well, if you're going to cover slavery in the show nowadays, you really... You have to put it. You can't just gloss over it. So yeah, it's pretty brave of them to broach it, because they're gonna have to address it. You know what I mean? They're gonna have to address it in I guess maybe not realistic terms, but
I think the difference is they
deal with the realities of slavery.
I think the very important key here is Anakin. It'd be very different if Anakin was not there and if Anakin was there. Those are two very different episodes, and Anakin is the emotional anchor of this episode, of this arc, this entire arc, actually. Because this could easily be just, like, Obi-Wan leading his men and, you know, Cody and Ahsoka is there, and they go in and they find the slaves and they get out. And that would be a season one episode of Clone Wars. This is season 4. They're now addressing a lot of the emotional and the mental parts of this war as well. And slavery is often a big part of war. A lot of times, like, prisoners of wars do be, like, especially in the olden days, became slaves and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Act 2?
I'm ready.
All right. Act 2. Anakin and Ahsoka are brought before Queen Miraj, who is finishing up the arrangements for her slave auction that evening. Anakin uses the pseudonym of Lars Quell. Anakin is all flirty like, "Yeah, I totally knew Bruno Denturi. Great guy. We both got beers and stuff together. He never said what a pretty kitty lady you are." Okay, I know the Zygerians are based off coyotes, but I love kitties and they will always be kitty people to me. And Queen Miraj is like, "Oh, really? Because Bruno was an enemy of mine, and I hate him." And Anakin keeps his cool, saying that he's already killed Bruno. "So rest in peace, Bruno. We literally never knew you." Anakin reveals Ahsoka, who is the quote-unquote slave from Bruno's palace. And clearly, Ahsoka is not one for acting, because she awkwardly yells, "Unhand me, brigand!" And everyone cringes, but the Jedi play it cool. Queen Miraj inspects Ahsoka like a slab of meat and does not take kindly to Ahsoka snipping back at her. Anakin lays on the charm super heavy-handed, making Ahsoka all but gag at him. And the kitty lady likes it, going, "This is my human." And that's the thing about cats. They love affections on their terms, and Anakin is probably the only Jedi who knows how to stroke a pussy, because he's married.
Oh, ho, 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 ho,
ho. Man, last week I dropped an NSYNC joke, and now I was making myself laugh when I was writing these. Anyway, the Queen takes Anakin and Ahsoka for a walk. In the dark corner, the Queen's Prime Minister and the obvious bad guy of the week is named Atai Molek, and he doesn't seem pleased at all by these newcomers. Meanwhile, Obi-Wan and Rex are looking for slaves at the auction to possibly buy and inspecting the slaves, but they're actually just looking for the colonists. Rex finds them, and Obi-Wan hops down into the hole to check it out. Obi-Wan finds Governor Rushdie from the Togruta colony, but the governor is weak. Obi-Wan takes him out of the hole. They still don't know where the rest of the Togruta colonists are. Obi-Wan steals a big riding gecko lizard, and Rex hops on with the governor. Rex takes the reins of the beast, and while they make their getaway, Obi-Wan gets shot in the shoulder, making him and the governor fall off the back of the lizard. Rex has no choice but to leave the two behind to rescue them later. Obi-Wan is captured by the Zygerians. Back at the palace, Queen Kitty is talking about how slavery is the natural order of things and stuff. Her Twi'lek slave takes this opportunity to try and stab the queen. Anakin stops the Twi'lek woman from attacking the queen. Not wanting to face the reprocessing center, the Twi'lek woman chooses to jump off the balcony and end her life. Queen Kitty likes Anakin for saving her life, and Anakin must continue to play his part. He gifts Ahsoka to the Queen, since Mirage is now in need of a servant. Queen Kitty invites Anakin to be her guest at the slave auction. Meanwhile, for a second week in a row, Obi-Wan is getting his ass kicked. Prime Minister Atai recognizes Obi-Wan from a holoscape call with Darth Nadar from last week, and he knows that this is a Jedi. We go to the slave auction in front of thousands of scummy guests from thousands of worlds. They bring out Minister Roshti to be sold first. From the Queen's side, Anakin spots Rex across the way and gives the signal that he's ready to act. Before Anakin can get any information about where the colonists are being held, Prime Minister Atai comes in and whispers urgent news to the Queen. Mirage stalls Anakin's question so the auction can begin. And Mirage gives a speech welcoming a very special guest, Mr. Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then Anakin and Ahsoka are like, say what now? The Zygarians shove Obi-Wan out into the arena in front of thousands of people who really hate Jedi. Mirage says that the Jedi are no different from the people who they enslave. The Jedi have sold their morals to serve the Republic in this war. Queen Kitty gives Anakin a whip to go down there and teach the Jedi his place. Anakin goes down and comes up behind Obi-Wan with a little quip about rescuing the old man. Mirage gives the order to swing the whip or Anakin will die with Obi-Wan. Anakin looks up to make sure Rex and Ahsoka are both ready. Anakin gives the Luke salute to R2, and R2 spits out Anakin and Obi-Wan's lightsabers to them. Rex works on taking out the guards around the balcony. Ahsoka gets her lightsaber to trap the Queen, and Anakin and Obi-Wan are fighting guards in the arena. And that's about as far as it goes, and about as well as they do, because Rex gets knocked off the balcony into the arena and is briefly stunned from the fall. Ahsoka, who is playing the slave, is wearing a shock collar, and the Queen activates it until Ahsoka falls into unconsciousness. Rex comes to only just to get stunned by a laser whip, and Obi-Wan is the next to go down. Finally, Anakin is the last one standing, and even covered in electric whips, he continues to fight back. And the Queen is like, whoa, this is totally my jam and really hot. I want him. And Anakin finally falls, and our heroes are all captured. What do you think of Act 2, Chris?
Here's where Anakin gets really dirty, because he's got to sacrifice that one slave. Basically, yeah. in order to keep his cover. He could have totally pulled her back with the Force, or jumped down and caught her. You know, there was any way, but he couldn't do it. He had to let her kill herself.
Mm-hmm. I think also, like, there's two ways. Like, he could have not stopped the slave from stabbing the Queen, but I don't think it would have mattered too much because Zygeria still has a prime minister, and they would
have. They have a plan, and they're not in place for their plan yet.
Yeah, because even then, like, if the Queen did die, Zygeria still has, like, a prime minister to fill her power void, so right. It's not like they would have stopped the Empire.
They're not there as much to kill the Queen. They've got a plan. We don't know what it is yet.
Well, the plan is find the colonists.
Right. But, I mean, they have a plan to do that. You know what I mean? They have, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to, you know, they're undercover. And, like, you know, they're stuff like Obi-Wan getting caught is obviously not exactly part of the plan because, he got shot off the lizard. He was actually trying to escape. But, you know, all the situations they've been into up in the last two episodes up to this point, they could have ended those situations at any time. You know, even the ones where they're not coming out on top. So they're playing some game, is what I think, you know.
I honestly think that the plan is, we need to find the colonists, and then we can call in the troops, we can call in the Jedi Council, they'll send in reinforcements. But as of right now, they can't do any of that until they find those 50,000 people, which they can't find, which we'll find out where they are next act.
Right, but I mean, they could escape and go looking for them or something, but they have a plan to find them and secure them, and getting captured is within the parameters of that plan. You know what I mean?
I don't think it is. I don't think they were expecting to get captured at all.
I don't think they were, but I'm saying, even if they, like, they get captured. Pardon me. They could escape at any time, but they're still playing it. You know, they're like, well, I'm gonna be here captured for a while. You know, like when Obi-Wan surrendered in the last one, he surrendered, but you know, whatever. You know, okay, I surrender, and then he just like treaded water till he got the situation in hand, and that's what I. Anakin is just waiting till the, you know, when the other shoe drops and he can go death wish on all these guys. But until then, it's like, okay, well, we'll get captured for a while and we'll see how that goes. You know, all they have to do is keep themselves from getting killed or horribly injured, you know, and eventually they're going to be in some sort of configuration and get some sort of opportunity where they can throw the switch.
I'm gonna slightly disagree, just because I think that's the plan now because they're having to adjust to it. But I honestly don't think they ever planned on getting captured.
Oh no, I'm not saying that they planned on getting captured. I'm just saying getting captured doesn't really throw a monkey wrench into their plan. Their plan is to physically be there. You know, being captured is gonna slow them down because they can't like explore as much. They're not free to roam around and look for stuff as much, but at the same time they're sort of there in the wheels of power, and they're gonna get put in front of, you know, powerful people to go, oh, Jedi blah blah blah, this and that, or you know, they're gonna be put on up for auction or something. They're gonna get an opportunity at some point. They're Jedi, they're just waiting. You know, when they had Ahsoka in the, you know, that might be in the third act. I should not mention that. But, you know, I mean, they'll just sit and meditate and wait, you know. We'll just wait. Okay. It's all rolling along
as it is. I see what you're saying. Okay. I misunderstood you.
I love the frilled lizard.
I love the lizards!
It's a little forward to episode 3, and yep, shows that Obi-Wan has a good little rapport with lizards, but this one's got the frill so it can actually fly and glide, and it's I was like, these people have spaceships, why do they go from one place to another in frilled lizards? And I'm like, oh, it's just another form of slavery and domination for them. They'd rather ride on a lizard that they're forcing to... that's another creature that they're forcing to fly from one place to another because they're that kind of people.
If you just need to get across the city, a spaceship's not the most practical thing, and it saves on gas money.
No, but but you gotta feed that lizard something. Gas money, whatever. You gotta put gas in your lizard. And you gotta have a lizard house. And you gotta scoop the lizard poop.
I'm messing with you, but... I mean... somewhat, but I mean, I am with you, but the lizards are like so much cooler than like a spaceship.
Oh yeah, they're visually cooler, and they also just sort of they paint a picture of the slavers riding on top of another creature that's dominated and controlled, you know, so it's just it's a visual metaphor too, so it's great. I love it. I only have two more notes, and we get to meet. I don't know if this was Monocle the Hutt.
Well, we have seen him previously, and like.
Well, I'm calling him Headset the Hutt now because he's got his gamer headset on.
Yeah, so we have seen Monocle before because he was in the Cad Bane episode.
He's still got the monocle, but he had the headset too, so the headset trumps the monocle, so he's now Headset the Hutt. And when the Queen gives her a little speech about the Jedi, she ain't completely wrong.
I had that note too.
She's got some good points there. She says actually a lot of stuff that you and I have been saying for the last couple years. So
yeah, I mean, because pretty much the Jedi are pretty much got roped into being the dogs, like the dogs of the Republic in this war. And we've talked about multiple times how the clones are pretty much slaves to the Republic. I mean,
this seems to be pretty much the opinion of almost everybody outside of the Jedi circle. You know what I mean? The Jedi still think they're righteous, but when you start getting everywhere else, everybody else are just kind of like, I don't know about these Jedi.
I mean, let's put this hat on somebody else's head. Is that not what Satine said to Obi-Wan in Season 2 in the Mandalore arc?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the exact same thing, only with different wording.
This is a little hard. This is a bit harsher, but it's
exactly what Satine said to Obi-Wan in the Season 2 arc, going, you sold your soul to the fucking war, man. I mean, that's not what Jedi are supposed to be. They're not warriors. They're peacekeepers. You're a slave. I mean, not in those words, but, I mean, Satine pretty much said the exact same thing, and we've already talked multiple times about how clones are pretty much just slaves. That's how we met. We're talking about how clones were slaves. How we met.
That's true. And we've been talking about it ever since.
I mean, that was totally one of my notes. I mean, the title of this is Slaves to of the Republic, not Slaves of Sigeria.
Ever it's since the prequels, and if you count you and Scott Gardner, most of my conversations about Jedi have been about how they sort of turned into turds there for a while.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's all the notes I got.
So for me, even to this day, Ahsoka's "Unhand me, Brigand!" just makes me laugh every time.
I think they should have said like something like, "Oh yeah, she's a spoiled prince. She's the princess, you know, or something like that." Because she acts like a princess who had, you know, this is the princess from the royal house that and she still thinks that she, you know, she has power over people.
It's kind of funny though, because I never noticed it until this watching. That in Act 1, when Ahsoka stops the Zygerian from whipping the Twi'lek, that Zygerian looks at Anakin and calls him a brigand. I never noticed that. And then right in Act 2, she was like, "Unhand me, brigand!"
Yeah.
I never put that together. But that line just makes me laugh so hard every single time, just because it's such an awkward line. And they all have, like, her and Anakin have this look of, like, that was bad. So every time, I love it. Something I just love about this arc, because we saw a lot of, like, this was actually one of my good points of the Mortis arc, which is people who are not usually with Obi-Wan being with Obi-Wan, because in Mortis it was Ahsoka and Obi-Wan. But now we get to see Rex and Obi-Wan together. And we're so used to seeing Rex with Anakin, and so I just like the change up of that Jedi clone duo, and they work really well together. And I said it last act, Rex is so much of a better choice in this situation than Cody, even though Cody is Obi-Wan's clone commander and has probably worked with Obi-Wan so much more, but I don't think Cody would be able to improvise and think on his feet like Rex can now, which is just a testament to Rex's journey.
Yeah, this is an undercover op, so yeah, Rex is way more you have to improvise and be a little more independent to do this.
Isn't that kind of scary though, because that just shows how much Cody in a way is just like primed for Order 66, because he doesn't get the journeys like this.
Well, you see, that's what I think the vast majority of them are primed for Order 66, you know. Rex is a fluke.
Yeah. I was watching a video the other day about the canon thing about what happened to the clones after Order 66. And one of the things is, like, the Empire was actually surprised how independent so many of them were, which is why they decommissioned the clones and went to stormtroopers, because they would rather train those people from the ground up. Even though the clone troopers were better soldiers, Palpatine saw how independent so many of them were, like Rex, and so for some of them, that's what saved their lives, like Rex, but others of them, I don't think they fared so well. I like when they change up the pairings together, because just Rex and Obi-Wan, I don't think they've ever worked one-on-one together, ever. And they work pretty darn well together until Obi-Wan gets shot, so... But I kind of wish we got more Rex and Obi-Wan team-ups in, because I really enjoyed their pairing. Unlike the last episode, which is just mostly a fun Clone Wars battle romp, now we're getting back into that heavy episodes again. And this week, we saw a freaking Twi'lek woman commit suicide to escape slavery.
Yeah, and Anakin wanting to save her life and not being able to.
Yeah.
That's a great idea for a scene. That's when I was watching this and I'm like, oh geez, now we're going heavy.
Yeah, especially this is still on Cartoon Network. I mean, they are not pulling punches. I mean, it could have been way more gory. They could have shown like splatter and stuff like that, which I'm glad they didn't.
Well, it's confounding a lot of expectations, because a cartoon show like this, usually it would have her be like, you know, I can't take it anymore and go to jump, and then Anakin would either, the story would either be he blows his cover to save her life, or he does something like manipulates the force to make it seem like an accident that she falls forward and hits her head and then they carry her off or whatever and saves her life. But no, they're not going to pull that punch in this one. They it's basically a punch right to Anakin's gut, so. And they do it, you know, and when she fell and you look up, there's her body on the ground, you know.
They didn't even have to show her body on the ground, but they did.
Yeah.
I mean, the implication of her jumping off is enough, but nope, they showed her body. So, I think it also just kind of gives an extra layer about how terrible these Igerians are, that people are willing to die and stay.
Yeah. Well, she had just tried to stab the queen too, so even if she stayed, her life was not gonna be very pleasant.
Yeah,
it was definitely gonna be a cost for that. So yeah,
at the slave auction with Rex hiding in the background among all the people, that one image of him there is one of my many backgrounds on my computer wallpaper. Is it there right now? I have a rotating wallpaper. It's not there right now. But that was one of my, just because I love that image of him peeking out, and you see it to see the majority of the costume and stuff like that. So that was my wallpaper for a very long time. I do like all the nods to other Star Wars movies in this act, because of course we get the very obvious, like Anakin doing the Luke salute to R2 and stuff like that. But I just, Obi-Wan being carried out into the arena in front of a bunch of people who hate him was very episode 2.
Man, he looks all frazzled there, too. He looks like he's got the shit beat out of him. It's great. His hair's all mussed up and everything.
He has the Agent Catalyst strand of hair that's very expensive to animate.
Yes, yeah.
Hashtag hot callus hair.
He really looks like he was shot at and missed and shit at and hit.
Yeah. But this is a very shitty episode of Jagus and Jedi, I must say. I'm sorry. I did it again.
I know. Oh, don't make a Britney Spears joke, please.
Oops. I did it again. I messed with Chris. Made him hate himself. Ooh, baby, baby. Oops. I feel like I'm in love. Cause there is Rex. And he has a new costume. Anyway. My only other note is I just really love the laser whip fight. It's just really cool.
Yeah.
It's just...
Especially when they got a whip in each hand, one around the neck, and they're just like... It's a lot of fun.
And seeing... I think Anakin lost his whip, but at some point had like a string thing just to help keep the whips off him. And so he was like swinging it around his head to block the other whips while using his lightsaber. And just it's just a really cool, quick little fight that I just really enjoyed watching. That was the fight I wanted to see last episode with Dinar versus Ahsoka with the laser whip on the ship. That was the fight I didn't get. So we got it in this episode and it was fun and I was happy for it. If we didn't get a laser whip fight, I was gonna be really upset.
Yeah, that's like Chekhov's whip, you gotta use it.
Well, that's all I have for Act 2.
All right, let's wrap this thing up.
All right, here we go. Act 3. Anakin wakes up to find that he's not in jail, but he's in the Queen's bed. Ooh. She's not too happy he ruined her auction, but that doesn't last too long because Anakin lets his Vader out. He starts force choking her, and she chokes out that if she dies, he'll never see his friends again, and Anakin releases her. Queen Mirage is like, oh, you have attachments. That's weird for a Jedi. You could have killed me and you didn't, so your friends mean more to you than your mission. This is going to be so much fun. The Queen says that Anakin will be her bodyguard as a testament to her power and gives Anakin back his lightsaber. Not knowing where his friends are or where the colonists are, Anakin has no choice but to accept this at this time. Meanwhile, Ahsoka is in a cage hanging off the side of a building while birds are trying to peck at her. Does she care? No. Ahsoka is just meditating, waiting for her time to strike back. She even almost throws Prime Minister Atai off the side of a building, but he catches himself. Out in space, Obi-Wan Rex and Governor Roshti are taken to another nearby planet of Kadavo, where the Zygerians keep their processing center over a big old volcano. As they exit the spaceship, they see the Togruta people lined up on these little circles on the ground. They finally found the missing 50,000 colonists. Obi-Wan and Rex are brought before Keeper Argus, who is excited to have a Jedi to break. Argus doesn't wait to pull any punches. He pushes a button to make a few circles open under a couple of unlucky Togruta people, and it opens up and drops them through the floor into the volcano below. Obi-Wan hasn't even said a word, but he knows that there is no negotiating now. Argus says that if Obi-Wan acts out, he'll just start killing colonists. Back at the Queen's Palace, Mirage just loves her new plaything, and she's already, like, all cuddling on Anakin like every good kitty does while they're taking a flying lizard ride. She can tell that Anakin was once a slave, too. She nuzzles his strong shoulders. Me too, girl. Me too. I'd totally take a free nuzzle if I could, too. And Anakin wants nothing of her promises of power and greatness, because he points out that they would never be a we, because she holds all the power. Queen Kitty looks a little shook at that. They land at the palace, and the queen is clearly smitten with Anakin. See, she suggests freeing her friends. She suggests freeing his friends if it gets him to stay with her. She gives him a clear choice to get answered in next week's episode. Anakin can choose to stay and free his friends, and if he says no, his friends will remain as slaves. The end.
This one does end sort of on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I have a thing about this third act, but I'll let you do your notes first.
Well, the only it's fun to see that the queen is starting. They're starting their slaver mind fuck training, brainwashing techniques on everybody, and they are also aware that they're Jedi and stronger than normal people, so they don't care. They you know, it's not just physical domination. They know how to mentally do it too, and they're starting the process of brainwashing Anakin and Ahsoka and Obi-Wan.
That thing with Obi-Wan, with them dropping the people, though, that's harsh.
yeah, but that's how you do it. You're not playing around with a Jedi, so you have to make the Jedi know right away, you know, don't do anything, because this is the cost to it, and no, you know. So, but at the same time, Anakin and Ahsoka are pushing back. They're starting to, you know, Ahsoka was just... lets the guy know, I could just chuck you off here at any time. And Anakin sees that the queen is starting to kind of like him and pushes a little romance button with her by saying, oh, there'll never be a we because you'll always have the power. You know, we'll never be a true team, which makes maybe the queen think about, like, but I want to be a true team. You know, so he's starting to mess with him back. And I like that. I like that. You know, you can tell they're all aware that they're in, you know, they're not going to be brainwashed. They're aware of what's being done to them and are starting to. And as I said earlier, I think you know, they're still in control. Bottom line is, if they have to, if they had to get out of that the situation, they could all get out of their situations, but they're just biding their time.
That is my very first note. There's like never a point in this where I don't feel that Anakin doesn't have the upper hand. I mean, he doesn't like playing slave, but he knows how to do it, and he knows that's how to get the job done.
Yeah. And my only other note is audio, an awesome, it's audio and visual detail that they added is when one of the slaver ships with the awesome rattly fiery engines lands and its mouth opens, it actually, before it lets out the people, it actually like exhales like a giant creature. It just goes, ha! And then opens its mouth. And I thought that was a great Star Wars moment. I'm like, that ship just landed and it's tired, you know? It just went, rattle. Bleh. And just a beautiful little piece of sound and visual design.
Yeah.
But that's about it I got for part three.
For me, again, we see another moment where Ahsoka is acting more like a Jedi than Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Because season one Ahsoka would not be calmly sitting in a cage hanging off the side of a building and meditating. And she's just grown so much. She's getting so big, and I'm so proud of her.
Yeah, and she can just sort of calmly toss that guy off there, too. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I love that moment. Like, she doesn't even over her head. She just lifts her hand and just flick.
Yeah,
and
I can kill you at any moment. Yeah.
But, I mean, because even when he, like, shocks her back, I mean, you don't get the feeling that, like, Ahsoka is not going to be okay. I mean, she's...
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's not going to be pleasant for them. But Jedi could take some shocking. We've learned that in the past.
Yeah. This isn't much of a criticism, but it is a little bit of a criticism. As much as I do love this arc and stuff like that, this third act has always felt a bit tacked on after the big climactic battle and stuff like that right in the middle of Act 2. But it's still a needed act. Like,
it's kind of a setup for the next episode.
Yeah, and that's why, because I know you haven't seen next week's episode, but it's a really jammed-packed episode. There's a lot that happens in it. So there's just not time to put this section in next week's episode. So it is still needed, and this episode would have really dragged if it was the first two seasons of just Obi-Wan and Rex sneaking around and Anakin and Ahsoka playing around. So there is good stuff in this episode. It just feels like it's a touch tacked on because... It's not the biggest cliffhanger in the world, but it's not the greatest cliffhanger in the world either, because we all know
it's not even really a cliffhanger. It's just sort of like end of part one. Yeah, it's just like, we'll return with part two of this. It's, you know, everybody's just sort of limbo. It's not like, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, danger cliffhanger. It's just sort of like, okay, this is not as self-contained an episode as the last one.
Yeah, I mean, if this was like, you know, if you were watching this for the first time, you know, like Rex and Ahsoka watching this for the first time, they always had the chance to die. You know, Anakin and Obi-Wan are going to be okay. But at the same time, like, you know, it's just a bit of a weird third act, but it's not a bad thing. Like, there's a lot of great stuff in it. It just feels oddly not in the right place, but to be honest, having had seen next week's episode, there's no place to put it in next week's episode either. So, I mean, it needs to be there. It feels a little wonky. I think it could have been done a little cleaner. Mostly it was the Anakin part, you know? You had this big battle and all this stuff, and he's threatening the queen, and then they go lizard riding. So it's that part that feels off to me, is the whole in part with Anakin and the queen and the lizard riding and all that. That's the bit that feels off to me. That could have been a little bit more smoother. Or if she would maybe came out more swinging, like, if you don't bow to me, I will kill your friend. That's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but she
that's,
like,
I don't think that's how they're working their brainwashing on Anakin. She can't manipulate Anakin by force. She has to manipulate him by guile, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not a bad criticism. It's just the third act could have just been a touch smoother. Again, I love the flying geckos. They're really cool.
Yes, they are.
And I put that on again because this time we actually got to see them fly.
They're I mean, they're really a ripoff of the lizard from episode 3, but they're actually cooler than the lizard in episode 3. They're an improvement on it for sure. And the head on the gecko, now that I'm thinking about it, looks like the head on this lizard that isn't frilled. It doesn't have the wings like these ones, but it looks very much like this folk art lizard I bought at this guy's garage sale a couple weeks ago. Has the same sort of round head.
Yeah. I'll do my little note before I do my last big note. I talked about it a little bit last night week, but I just really enjoy watching Anakin in a really uncomfortable position.
Yes.
I like watching him squirm. I think it's really good for him in the course of the overarching story of Clone Wars and his downfall to Vader. Because none of this is good for him mentally.
No, yeah.
None of it is good. You know, it's kind of interesting, too. Even after he becomes Vader, he becomes a slave to Palpatine.
That's true. That's sort of his return to slavery, actually.
He's still pretty much a slave as a Jedi. I mean, like, he... Anakin
That's true. He's just sort of... But at least as a Jedi, when he was a kid, though, he was like, I want to be a Jedi, you know? So it wasn't like they just grabbed him and he's like, where are we going? We're going to make you into a Jedi. He was sad about leaving his mom, but he was pretty much into being a Jedi.
And he got to be with Padme and stuff, so...
Right.
I mean, it was... He went from slave to kind of indentured servant to slave. I mean, it's kind of sad. The only time, Anakin was ever truly free of slavery, or, like, either the Republic controlling the Jedi or Palpatine controlling him as Vader, is when he's dying and Luke has freed him. I mean, that's really sad.
His slavery with the Jedi is, I guess, more like the slavery you would have if you were, like, join the armed forces or something. He could always quit the Jedi and be a shopkeeper if he wanted to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think any other Jedi could do that but Anakin, because he's the chosen one. I think they would try and get him back. He's kind of important to the Jedi.
Yeah, but I could see it. I could see there being some people like, oh, he's important to the Jedi, but then there are a lot of people, like the Yodas and Mace Windus, who go like, well, maybe through the interpretation, the chosen one's going to be a shopkeeper for, you know, but technically, his slavery to the Jedi... He could have ended it at any time. Not that he ever would have, really. It doesn't seem like it was anywhere. You know, he'd rather...
Can you imagine Anakin as a shopkeeper? He'd be so bored.
Terrible. He'd be terrible at it.
He'd be so bored, and he'd
do it for, like, 3 months, and then he would kill somebody.
Yeah, and he'd be like, look, Padme, I made a death bot.
If Anakin was gonna leave the Jedi Order, it would have been to marry Padme. And he'd rather go and sort of, you know, go against the rules and actually leave the Jedi. So, you know, and that's sort of why he probably falls to the dark side, is he wants to be a Jedi, but he doesn't want to be a Jedi, really. So but he stays. So I think that really helps in his tumble to the dark side. To the dark side.
I just find it, like, really sad the only time he's ever free is when he's dying in his son's arms.
Yeah, right.
that's the first time he's ever really, truly been free of everything is on his death. Which makes just Anakin such a tragic character.
Yep.
He's such a good character. Even when
Thank you, Clone
Dan.
Wars.
Thank you, Clone Wars. Thank you, Henry Gilroy and Dave Filoni and all you guys. Thank you. We appreciate you. This is great. My last big note is about Queen Mirage and how she's more than just a cute kitty person, because Lord knows I love kitties. She's kind of different from every other bad guy that we had, because a lot of the times the bad guys of the week are usually, like, kind of crazy or, like, very over-the-top evil and stuff like that. And, yeah, she does want power. But she also kind of has these, like, subtle human moments at times. Like, I love her when she's talking to Anakin. She's just like, yeah, I know who I am. I'm a slaver. I'm okay with that. This is who I am. And also, she's kind of a morally gray person to me, too. Because, yes, I'm going to say this right now. Slavery is really bad. But that's also what her people do. You know, the Jedi completely destroyed the Zygarian Empire.
Well, the way...
And it's kind of like growing up, you know, she was probably raised to believe that slavery is good and stuff like that. And so in a way, like, trying to rebuild the slaver empire is a way for her, that she sees herself as a way to help her people, which makes her a very gray character because she's trying to help her people in the shittiest way possible, which makes her a very interesting character to me because she's trying to be a good queen to her people. She's just doing it through slavery.
Well, I like her line. It's really one of the best lines in just like from a writing point of view where she's like, you know, listen, I'm very simple. My motivations are simple. I buy and sell slaves and I have no compunction about it. That's what I am. That's all I am. You know, basically sort of talking like a sociopath, you know, or a psychopath, but, you know, just, or as somebody with no sense of morality or anything like that. But she's like, you're the one who's complicated, you know. This is all your, you know, that's all your problem because you're complicated. But I'm simple. This is, you know, black and white, and I'm doing what I should be doing. And if I wasn't, you know, it's like a lot of people who do stuff like that say, if I wasn't doing it, somebody else would be doing it. So it's gonna get done. Somebody's got to do the dirty job.
It kind of reminded me of also like people raised in areas like full of very heavy propaganda.
Sure.
Because you can't help where you're raised. So if you're raised, you know, I was watching a thing about North Korea, and when we learn math, we learn 1 + 1 = 2. When they learn math, they learn 1 dead Korean + 1 dead Korean = 2 dead Koreans because the Americans killed them. That's what they, and that's what these children are taught. So they don't, if you want to see a really good episode about how, oh, what's it called? It's from Avatar: The Last Airbender, dance episode, Avatar. What is the name of this episode? The Headband. There's an episode called The Headband of Avatar: The Last Airbender. And the whole thing about Avatar: The Last Airbender is that Aang is the Avatar. He got frozen in ice for 100 years and he's come back and he's found out that the Fire Nation has started this massive worldwide war and trying to take over the world. Well, at one point in season 3, they go into the Fire Nation, which is the enemy, and they're all dressed like Fire Nation kids and stuff like that. And Aang came from the people called the Air Nomads. And right after he got frozen in ice, the Fire Nation came and committed genocide on the Air Nomads. So when he is trying to pretend that he's a Fire Nation kid, he goes into one of their schools, and they're teaching the history of the Fire Nation, and they're teaching that the Air Nation were terrible people and they deserve to die. And Angus and you're going, we were monks. The Air Nation people were monks. They were peaceful. They had no weapons. And the children were just like, oh, how dare you say that? That's not true. That's not how history works. And he was just like, what do you mean? And he's just totally taken aback by that they're teaching these children wrong history. And these children are growing up to think that these Air Nomads were monsters. That's kind of how I feel that this was probably how Mirage was raised. You know, she was probably raised thinking slavery is the natural way of things. This is how it works. You know, we are the powerful people. They are the not powerful people. And we rule them. And so that's why I like her. Because to me, I feel like she's just seeing this as a way of, I'm rebuilding my people, I'm rebuilding my empire, and I'm going to make my people better through this really terrible thing. And she admit, I mean, she's like, yeah, this is bad, but it's going to help my people. Which is why I like her character, because she very much is a morally gray character, that she's doing what's good for her people. It's just bad for everybody else.
Yeah, well, she doesn't care about anybody else. That's not, they're not her.
In a way, does that make her a good queen for her people?
I guess, technically.
Yeah, I guess. It's bad for everybody else, but it's probably to her people. She's probably awesome, because they haven't had their empire since the Old Republic, and she's trying to bring her empire back. Yeah. So, I mean,
well,
I guess...
that depends on... her logic depends on the only way to be good for your people is to be bad for other people, you know? There's ways to be good for your people and good for other people, too.
And I'm sure that, like, you know, it depends on her friends. I'm sure Dooku is fine with all this. Yeah, he's probably,
I mean,
like,
I'm sure there's some sort of crop they could grow on their planet, too. You know, slaving all of that's just to justify slaving is probably a lot more money than growing crops, so.
You know, they could probably sell those floating Mortis flowers.
Yeah, probably.
These came from the land of Mortis. What's that? I don't know. We don't talk about it. We don't talk about Mortis anymore. But that's all I have for the episode. Did you have anything else?
Nope, that's all I got.
All right, score it up, Chris.
I like this one better than the last one, even though it's not as self-contained. I think this really bit deeper into the Anakin as a slave thing, and at the same time it's making Anakin bite his tongue, go undercover, and he's around the Queen, it's driving him nuts, but at the same time he's also getting some insight into the slavers themselves. So this is a good episode. It's not as action, there's nothing as good as the speeder bike chase in the last one, but the frilled lizards take the place of that. So I bopped it up a half a point, so we're up to 9 on this one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha, you're in like
Mbaro. I really like this one, yeah.
Yeah. I really like this episode a lot too. I mean, again, this is my second favorite arc of Clone Wars. I just love the fight in Arena and a lot of the design elements of Zygeria. Especially the fight in Arena, it just has kind of very much a feel of episode 2 in it, so I like all the nods to the other movies. And these Zygerians don't mess around. Nope. They are ready to kill people. And I like the Rex and Obi-Wan team up, just to have that little different chemistry together. And Ahsoka continues to shine as she grows, and Queen Mirage is just one of my favorite villains of the season, if not for the series. I just think she's such a great character with her gray morality and stuff, and it's just nice to see Anakin squirm. There are some flaws in this episode. Like I said, Act 3 just kind of bothers me a little bit, and it's just a little bit jarring and has a weird ending to it. But I mean, I'm more than happy to put that to the side, just because I still like this episode as a whole and stuff. So I bumped it up a little bit too. I mean, I gave it an 8.5 out of 10.
Ooh, wow! We're averaging you a half point under me for.
You know, the
thing, and it's your second favorite arc.
It is my second favorite arc, and it's just pretty much so far it's been about a point under Umbara, because my first episode of Umbara was a 9, and my second arc a point of Umbara was a 9.5. So, I mean, I'm just a point under Umbara right now.
That's true.
So, yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on Twitter, iTunes, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. We especially like iTunes. We haven't had an iTunes review in a while. So if you like us, go leave us a review on iTunes, because it helps people find the show. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page, Nomad Droids.
All right, the first one is from Aaron Henley. And it says, it's the Star Wars version of Gulliver's Travel in Wizard of Oz, which ends slightly different than the actual story. Yeah, slightly. Lots more shooting involved, yes. I don't think there was any shooting. I think there was shooting in Gulliver's Travel, but definitely not the Wizard of Oz. I love this episode and can't wait to hear what you guys think. Well, now you know. Now you know. We liked it. Especially Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Gene Hendrick says, Chris saying Yoda knows everything made my brain add in an announcer saying, Yoda will now be played by Bo Jackson. Yes, I'm old and weird. That's Gene saying, yes, I'm old and weird, but I am also old and weird. Because Bo knows. That was an old advertising. I think that was before your time, Hope.
Sorry, I got a message from work and I was responding to it right fast.
And Patrick Delmore says, you gotta do Willow. I've never seen Willow, so that's I think that's why he's saying that, because I probably cop to that. And that.
And I think we mentioned possibly doing it as a commentary, if I remember correctly. Mm.
I'd have to watch it first before I did a commentary on it, or else I'd just be like, I don't know how I'd be able to. I'd be like, oh, this is. Oh. I wonder what will happen next.
Yeah. Oh gosh, we didn't. We're.
No, just like last week, we're gonna have to improvise. I'm gonna go into a sugar coma, man. I had some pear pie today that Scott McGregor's mom made and that his girlfriend brought up from the North Country. So I had some pear pie, which was delicious. Very similar. It's like a funky. It was very much like apple pie, but a little funkier, a different texture.
And I love pears because they're like weird apples, and I love them.
Yeah, they have more of a grain to them. But I've been loading up on the sugar. I had one of those little like bodega fruit pies, like the cheap version of the Hostess fruit pies, but it was a pumpkin one. And then I had and we did two episodes today. Spoiler, and this is the second episode, and I ate a Kit Kat during that, so I am sugared up.
I've discovered a Tnox milk chocolate coated caramel wafer biscuit.
Ooh, wow. That's a.
I know.
That's a descriptive name of something. So.
Do I still have my list of where it might be from?
I have two sort of flat taffy things. I have big hunk and I have look. Which one do you. Should I do big hunk or should I do look?
Do the big hunk, because okay. I have that too, but I just have to be super careful eating cat taffy because it tends to pull on my fillings. So I'm just going to completely pass on it.
Well, this is by Annabelle's, and the big hunk says it's chewy, honey-sweetened nougat with whole roasted peanuts. So it's probably going to be like, oh, I can't remember the name of a bit of honey. I'll bet you it's a lot like a bit of honey, except with peanuts in it. And oh, by the way, our buddy Dario sends us candy from around the world.
Because he's great. Yeah, I was seeing if this Tnox caramel bar was on my list of candy to see where it's from, but it doesn't say. So I'm going to say it is from the planet of Earth.
it came from somewhere. I think this is straight up from America, I'll bet you.
Oh, wait! It says on the side of it, Thomas Tnox Udenston, Scotland, established in 1890. So I have Scotland. It says it right on the side.
Mine says, Hayward, California.
Oh my god, this is really good.
Okay, so this.
Mine has some wafers, but the layer in between is caramel, but it's not chewy caramel. And the outside is like a milk chocolate. So it's not very sweet either. I always like not very sweet things.
This is just like flat white taffy. I thought it would be yellow like a bit of honey, and it's literally just got chunks of peanuts in it. And it's good. You know what? It doesn't taste like taffy as much as super dense marshmallow fluff. It's like marshmallow fluff flavored taffy, but it's a little airier than taffy. It's delicious.
I think mine has been maybe sitting in my box too long because it's touched out, but still really good.
Oh, mine's kind of melted, but it's been hot here lately. It tastes like marshmallow fluff. It doesn't really taste like honey. That's good.
Oh, man. Thank you, Dario, as always. We love you. Thank you so much. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me, Mr. Taffy Mouth, at twotruefreaks.com. That is... that is our internet website.
Those are some good-tasting podcasts. They're delicious.
They are some delicious podcasts. But they may give you diabetes. But it's only podcast diabetes, so you don't need any shots for that. And we have podcasts of all varieties. As long as your varieties are nerd varieties. Sorry, this is delicious.
It's okay.
We are also on Facebook.
I'm still clearing my caramel and wafer out of my teeth, so it's okay.
So if you go to Facebook, if you actually just go to the Googles and put in Two True Freaks, T-W-O True Freaks, you're going to see our, you'll see our webpage will come up first. And you'll see our Facebook page. We also have the Two True Freaks Cantina. You probably even see our Twitter page run by Gene, the podcasting machine. Gene. And,
one day you should do that in a round.
Oh my god. Yeah, we'd have to practice.
Just edit it in a round.
One day. But yeah, I think that's about all of our Two True Freaks interwebs presence. We really don't have any presence anywhere else. You can't really, unless you want to come to one of our houses, and really you should get a hold of us before you do that, because otherwise it would be a little bit creepy.
You know, it's really hard to miss us if you just know where to look.
All right, where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jagus and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter accounts. With Rebels right around the corner, I'm gonna start live tweeting Rebels. So that's coming up. Can't wait. So excited and terribly scared for the season. So we'll see what happens. You can also find me at Hope Molnax, and I'm also the news writer for With the Fangirl. As I said last week, and it hasn't changed since last week because we did two episodes tonight. I got approval to start doing some cool artist promotional stuff between now and Christmas, and I'm really excited about it because supporting artists is very important to me, especially freelance artists and people who aren't like with the big two like Marvel and DC or Image or anything like that. So they need to get their voices out there, and I'm gonna be promoting a lot of really cool stuff. I've already started scoping it out now. I just need to work out the final schematics for it, and that's gonna take just a touch bit more time, but pretty much between now and then, I'm with the Fangirl, I'm gonna start putting out some really cool, unique, geeky stuff between now and Christmas. Please be on the lookout for it. It's at whatthefangirl.com, and I'm super excited. And, you know, go support your local artist and your artist friends and internet artists who are trying to feed themselves, because art is very important. Art is incredibly important.
And eating is very important also for artists.
It is very important, so.
For anybody, actually.
So, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So, yeah, that's about all I have now that I'm in a sugar coma, because I spent the last two episodes eating Jelly Bellies and coffee.
And then more candy. So, I forgot what I was going to ask. So the next episode is the resolution on this? Are we going to get is this a three-parter or a four-parter?
It is a three-parter, and then you'll be very happy after next week's episode. They have a one and done.
Yeah!
You got a one and done coming up, so.
I hope it's Greavy's day out.
No. It's a possible little romance.
With Creepy?
No.
Oh.
Remember the boy that when Padme and Ahsoka went to go find the Separatists and meet up with the Separatists, and there's a boy there?
Yeah. Padme's little boy, little sassy boyfriend.
Yeah, Ahsoka's little sassy boyfriend. Padme already has a sassy husband. She doesn't.
Oh, right. It was Ahsoka's sassy boyfriend, yes.
Yeah, so. We kind of see what happens when your mom gets murdered by Count Dooku.
Ooh, somebody's tune's gonna change.
Yep, you get to see what happens when Dooku murders your mom. Stuff happens to you. So it's, yeah, and it's a really cool episode because it also comes back again in season 5 during the Saw Gerrera arc.
All right, so we got some mom murder to look forward to next week.
Yep, so it's gonna be fun. I'm really excited. I don't actually, to be really, really honest, I've only seen that episode like once, so I really don't remember it outside of Lux just being there. I think it snows. I think. I don't remember.
Well, we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, like, you know, I've watched Umbara in this arc so much that I know them very well. Like, there was parts of me just, like, writing the outline where I wasn't even watching the episode just because I knew what happened.
Right.
But pretty much, like, this last chunk of the season, actually from about the last chunk of the season to the end of Clone Wars, I've only seen the episodes once, maybe twice. The only one that I know that I've seen more than that is the first arc of season 6. Because it's a clone episode, so of course I've watched it like 4 times.
All right, so I guess come back next week when maybe it snows. Maybe.
It's kind of like I don't want to say it's new territory for me because I know what happens, but it's not fresh territory.
Right.
So, but yeah, we'll see what happens. It'll be fun.
Maybe there'll be snow, maybe not. You'll
yeah,
know next
but I don't,
week.
Well, not next week. Week after.
Oh, the week after. All right, yeah, never
next
mind.
Next week, there'll be kitty people in sand and a resolution.
In resolution.
And we'll see if Anakin finally gets to break out. You know you make me break out. Make me break out. You damn kitty people. Gonna fucking kill you all. You gonna make me break out.
All right, I'm cutting it somewhere else.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.